Maryland. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tatway and the entire team, it's goodbye until next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك سريع العقاب وإن صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Here's a look at our top stories this hour. International condemnation and calls for accountability over Israel's recent violent attacks on Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the desecration of the Muslim holy site. Bloodshed in Afghanistan. Dozens are killed in a bomb explosion targeting a mosque in Kunduz, the latest in a chain of terrorist attacks in recent days. Plus, Muslims in Iran and other parts of the world commemorate Laylatul Qadr, the night when the Holy Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad. Hello and welcome. We come to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Thank you for joining us. Tensions simmering in occupied Al-Quds, where Israeli forces have once again attacked Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. So far, dozens of Palestinians have been injured. Israeli forces made arrests too. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has reacted to the latest attack on Al-Aqsa Mosque. The movement said it's closely monitoring the situation there and is fully ready to respond to Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people. Hamas also called on the international community to restrain the occupying Israeli regime and stop its aggression against Al-Aqsa. Tensions at the holy site began last Friday when Israeli forces attacked Palestinian worshippers, injuring scores. The aggression is taking place during the fasting month of Ramadan. Jordanians take to the streets of the capital Amman in solidarity with the Palestinians amid intensified Israeli assaults on worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque. The protesters say the Jordanian government must expel the Israeli ambassador and scrap a peace treaty signed with the regime. Jordan's foreign minister, Ayman Safadi, recently summoned Israel's chargé d'affaires to protest recent Israeli brutality at Al-Aqsa and its vicinity in the occupied Old City of Al-Quds. Last week, over 75 Jordanian lawmakers also called for severing ties with the Tel Aviv regime and suspending all bilateral agreements. Similar protest rallies were also held across the world, including in the besieged Gaza Strip, Pakistan, and the UK.
A big rally was held in the besieged Gaza Strip to support Al-Quds in the face of rising Israeli aggression against the Holy City. Thousands of people from all walks of life came out to express their adherence to resistance as the best way to defend Al-Quds against Israeli attacks. Tensions have been on the rise in recent days as extremist Israeli settlers, backed by Israeli regime forces, desecrated the city's Al-Aqsa Mosque. Protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and slammed the silence of Arab countries towards the Israeli crimes. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, which organized the Friday rally, warned the Israeli regime against violations in Al-Quds.
We will not leave Al-Quds as a prey for the Zionist enemy, and our people are united today in defending Al-Quds. The Palestinian resistance is very strong and will defend Al-Quds against Zionist attacks. Today's rally and the masses here are sending a strong message to the Zionist enemy. If these Zionist attacks against Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque don't come to an end, our people will explode in the face of the Zionist entity.
Since the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, the Israeli forces and illegal settlers have been trying to prevent Palestinians from gathering and performing their religious duties at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Al-Quds is sacred to all Muslims, and Palestinians consider it as the capital of their future state.
We are here today to show our solidarity and support for Al-Quds in the face of Zionist aggressions. All Palestinian resistance groups are here to send a message of unity. We will spare no effort to protect Al-Quds, and we call on all Arabs and Muslims to support the resistance and help us to protect Al-Quds and the Aqsa Mosque.
Palestinians have expressed their willingness to sacrifice their lives for the sake of liberating Al-Quds.
Observers say the international community has failed to help the Palestinians in Al-Quds and turned a blind eye to Israeli violations against them for decades. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Braving the scorching heat while fasting, protesters took to the streets after Friday prayers across Pakistan to voice solidarity with Palestinians as tension continued to simmer in the occupied Al-Quds, where Israeli forces once again attacked Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Protesters here are outraged over what they call the double standards of the international community and the way they view Ukraine compared to Palestine.
Double standards is the biggest issue with international community. East Timor, South Sudan, Kashmir, Palestine, you name it. When Muslims are victims, they will always turn their backs on us. Therefore, I think it's about time to put an end to this collective behavior against Muslims on international stage.
Actually, we are being a Muslim, Al-Aqsa, the Muslims over there are brothers and sisters. If they're in pain, we are feeling the same pain in our body. The whole Muslim Ummah is like a one body. If one part feels is in pain, the whole body feels the pain. So we are feeling that pain, and we are gathered here to tell the world that they are not alone. We are with them.
Speakers at the rally stressed upon the need of unity among the Muslim world.
We are who are gathered over here because of, as you know, the situation which is going on in Palestine. Israelis are continuously terrorizing or they are attacking the innocent people of Palestine. That's why we are gathering in the protest to show their solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Again, you know, the Jews, army and the military, paramilitary forces, they are not letting the Muslims over there freely praying and offering their rituals of the Ramadan. And everybody knows this is the holiest month of Ramadan, and this is very sacred to the Muslim.
The Israeli aggression against Palestinians has once again escalated during the fasting month of Ramadan. Scores of Palestinians have been injured by the Israeli forces at the Al-Aqsa Mosque over the past few days. Mohammed Touri, Karachi.
Amid ongoing violence in Palestine, hundreds of London protesters mobbed outside Israel's embassy to condemn the regime's ongoing onslaught. The Islamic holy site in the occupied capital, Jerusalem Al-Quds, has been targeted with daily raids by not just regime forces, but also Zionist fanatics who seek to desecrate Islam's second holiest site during Ramadan. the holiest month for Muslims.
I struggle to comprehend how human beings can do this to others. It's occupation, but for the numbers of people that are happy to use their hate to hit and kill people, the anger that I feel and the sadness and the heartache for the Palestinians, it's difficult.
The unrest also sparked hostilities between Gaza-based Palestinian resistance fighters and Israeli regime forces as the two sides exchanged fire early on Thursday. The lack of mainstream media attention, despite the shocking footage which has emerged, has equally infuriated many onlookers.
It's not just me. Every Palestinian have been hit with the fact that international law is very selective. The application of international law depends on the interests of these countries. And, the major powers insist to keep putting Israel above the law, to keep shielding Israel from international scrutiny and international sanctions. And if this does anything, it actually exposes that the world is not serious about its own rules and laws.
This isn't the first time that the Israeli regime has conducted acts of aggression against Muslims during the holy month of Ramadan in occupied Palestine. However, global awareness of Israel's crimes is at an all-time high, and with future protest action planned over the next days and weeks here in London, the global reaction to what's been going on is far from over. Robert Carter, London.
Iran's permanent ambassador to the United Nations denounces Israel's latest attacks on Al-Aqsa Mosque and killing of Palestinians by the regime in Al-Quds. Majid Tahrir-Ravanchi called for immediate action by the international community, especially the UN, to end Israeli occupation and acts of aggression. Tahrir-Ravanchi made the remarks in a meeting of Islamic countries' ambassadors in New York, where the UN Secretary General was also present. The meeting focused on the desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque by Israeli forces over the past days. Delegates of other Islamic nations also highlighted the UN's role in achieving a fair resolution to the Palestinian issue. In yet another bombing in Afghanistan, a blast tore through a mosque in the northern city of Kunduz. The Taliban spokesman says the explosion left 33 people dead and 43 others injured. There's been no claim of responsibility for the attack, which followed multiple blasts claimed by the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group in the country. The Taliban say they have arrested a Daesh member in connection with a Thursday bomb attack at a Shia mosque in Mazar-e-Sharif. They say he was the mastermind of the deadly blast. Local sources say over 36 people were killed in the Mazar-e-Sharif bombing. On Thursday, Kunduz was also rocked in a similar attack where 4 people lost their lives. Major cities in Afghanistan have been reeling from bomb attacks since the Taliban takeover in August 2021. China joins the global outcry against a recent UK court order to extradite WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to the US to face trial. A foreign ministry spokesperson says the extradition can lay bare the hypocritical nature of the American government. Wang Wenbin said the order also reveals the true face of the US with regard to freedom of speech and the press. Plus, he added, Assange's case shows that the US regards as a criminal anyone who exposes its scandals. Back in 2010, Assange published about 500,000 military files detailing alleged U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. The Australian-born journalist has been held in a British prison since 2019 after Ecuador revoked his asylum at its embassy there. If he's extradited to the U.S., he could face up to 175 years in prison. Reporters Without Borders and other media watchdogs have called on the U.K. government not to approve the extradition. The Ukrainian president says Russia plans to capture other countries following its attack on Ukraine. Volodymyr Zelensky said it's unclear which nation is next in line and urged other countries to fight alongside Ukraine to counter Russia. He was reacting to comments by a top Russian general. Rustam Menikhaev said Russia wants to take full control over eastern and southern Ukraine as part of the second phase of its special operation there. It said taking those areas would provide a land corridor to the Crimean Peninsula. Russia on Thursday announced the capturing of Mariupol, a strategic port city in southern Ukraine. Moscow says its operation in Ukraine aims to demilitarize and denazify the country. U.S. police say the suspect in a shooting in Washington, D.C. on Friday afternoon has died. Police believe the person took his own life as officers were entering the apartment where he was located. They say six firearms, including several long guns, were found. Investigations so far show that the weapons were purchased legally. The motive for the shooting is still unclear, and police say there's no other suspect. They say the shooter randomly opened fire on people, wounding four. The incident took place in a Washington, D.C. area where a number of foreign embassies are located. Shootings are frequent occurrences in the United States, where firearms are involved in approximately 40,000 deaths a year. Iranians are marking Laylatul Qadr, or the Night of Destiny, the occasion when the Holy Quran was revealed to the Prophet of Islam some 14 centuries ago. Yusuf Jalali has this report from the Holy Shrine of Imam Reza, the 8th Shia Imam, in Iran's northeastern city of Mashhad.
Whispers with God on a night that's believed by Muslims to be a time when their wishes are fulfilled. It's called Laylatul Qadr, or the Night of Destiny. Muslims observe the occasion every year in the month of Ramadan when they congregate at religious sites to pray and make wishes. To Iranians, no place is better than the shrine of the 8th Shia Imam Reza in the city of Mashhad to keep vigil on the occasion.
Words cannot describe my feelings tonight. It's a night of destiny when God has promised to listen to our prayers. It's a night which the Quran says is better than 1,000 months. I'm so happy to be in Imam Reza's shrine on this divine night.
After 2 years, we once again can visit the holy shrine of Imam Reza, our beloved Imam, and that on the Night of Destiny. I wish that God will eradicate the coronavirus once and for all, for us to be able to live peacefully and visit our holy sites.
Islamic scriptures say Laylatul Qadr marks the night when the Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad. The Quran says on this night, angels descend on earth to listen to the prayers of worshippers.
We believe that on the Night of Destiny, angels come to earth upon God's order. The Quran says in its verses that the book was revealed to the Prophet on this night, and the angels will stay on earth till dawn. That's why we never miss out on this holy night and come here to pray.
No exact date is provided for the Night of Destiny, but all Islamic references are unanimous that the Quran was revealed to the Prophet on one of three different dates, the 19th, the 21st, or the 23rd night of the holy month of Ramadan.
It's the first time after more than 2 years that the Night of Destiny is marked without serious concerns over the coronavirus, and this has attracted this huge number of pilgrims to the shrine of Imam Reza to once again mark Laylatul Qadr en masse, and at the same time, reunite with their 8th Imam after 2 years. Yusuf Jalali from the Holy Shrine of Imam Reza in Mashhad.
After 3 weeks of waiting for the reopening of Sana'a International Airport, the Yemeni Civil Aviation Authority has announced the start of the commercial flights to Sana'a Airport next Sunday. According to the announcement, there will be one flight a week, which is not enough to help the humanitarian situation in the war-ravaged country. Abdul Latif Al-Washili has more on the story from Sana'a.
Yemen Civil Aviation and Meteorology Authority announced that the first commercial flight to Sana'a International Airport will start next Sunday from Antu, Jordan. Observers say the UN brokered agreement said there will be two flights a week from and to Egypt and Jordan, and allowing one flight only is not enough to help the humanitarian situation.
Announcing the start of one flight per week to Jordan is not enough and confirms there are no sincere intentions by the Saudi-led coalition to abide by the declared UN truce. There must be a full opening of Sana'a Airport and the port of Hodeidah because the humanitarian situation cannot tolerate more restrictions.
The Ministry of Health says thousands of patients, including children, are in dire need to travel abroad for treatment. Therefore, the United Nations should fulfill its duty and remove any restrictions on the two-weekly flights. Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a deadly war on Yemen on March 2015 and imposed a closure on Sana'a International Airport. This closure has led to the death of thousands of patients, including children, especially amid the collapse of the healthcare system in the country due to the years-long Saudi war and the blockade.
Yemenis received the news of resuming the flights of Sana'a International Airport with hopes to see further flights to other destinations around the world. They say opening Sana'a Airport will save the lives of thousands of Yemeni patients, including children, who are in danger amid the absence of essential healthcare services. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam and welcome to the program. Tonight might be the night of Qadr or the night of ordainment. The night of Qadr is the night of mercy, goodness, and blessing till the rising of dawn. It is the best night of year. According to narrations, the earth is filled with angels, and the fate of all creatures is determined for the next year. It was said in the previous episode that God suffices for meeting the needs of his servants. He has no associate or helper. He is omnipresent. He sees our deeds and is nearer to us from our jugular vein. But we often forget that we are in his presence. In order to understand that we are in God's presence, we need guides and leaders. These leaders intercede for us so that God pardons our sins and negligence and bestows his mercy and forgiveness upon us. Having a guide is the most important need for mankind. That's why God has met this need without our asking him. He sent prophets to remind people of God. In Ayah 21 of Surah Ghashiyah, God tells the prophet, "So admonish, for you are only an admonisher." Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, called on the faithful in the last days of his life to cling to the Quran and his progeny, the Ahlul Bayt, to be immune from deviation. God has made the Prophet and the infallible Imams as a means between himself and the servants. He calls on servants in Ayah 56 of Surah Isra to seek recourse to their Lord, whoever is nearer to him. The Prophet called himself and Imam Ali as the fathers of this Ummah. So, clinging to the Prophet and the infallible Imams is a divine command. God says in Ayah 64 of Surah Nisa, "Had they, when they wronged themselves, come to you and pleaded to Allah for forgiveness, and the Apostle had pleaded for forgiveness for them, they would have surely found Allah all clement, all merciful." Taking recourse to the Prophet and the Imams never means associating anyone with God or considering them equal to God. It is very simple. Every house has a door, and to enter the house, one should open the door. To enter the divine throne, we should go through his good servants. God says in Ayah 189 of Surah Baqarah, "Come into houses from their doors, and be wary of Allah, so that you may be successful." Taking recourse to sanctities and good servants of God is not polytheism. Prophet Jacob's sons asked him to seek forgiveness for them, and he said he would soon plead with his Lord to forgive them. Moreover, Jacob put Joseph's shirt on his face, and he regained his sight. Are objects superior to God's best servants? So, can the Prophet of Islam and his infallible successors not plead to God to solve people's problems? Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and his infallible successors, would recite the Quran at any time they could. It is narrated that when Imam Reza, peace upon him, reached ayahs that say, "O you who have faith," would say, "Labbaik, Allahumma labbaik." It means, "I answer your call, O God, I answer your call." Imam Reza was so much accustomed to the Quran that he used to recite it completely in 3 days. He said, "If I wanted, I could finish it in less than 3 days. But I have never read an ayah except that I have reflected on it. And I thought on what issue and when the ayah had been revealed. Thus, I recite the Quran within 3 days. The eighth Imam says on the virtues of the blessed month of Ramadan, "In the month of Ramadan, sins are forgiven. Recitation of one ayah of the Quran in this month is equal to recitation of the whole Quran in another month. Making brothers in faith happy causes happiness in the hereafter. And on the day when all feet will slip on Sirat Bridge, God will help him cross over the bridge. He who restrains his anger, God will keep his wrath away from him. If anyone helps an oppressed, God will preserve him from the enemies, and on the day of judgment will help him in reckoning." A proper diet is very important in Ramadan. Glucose is saved in the liver and muscles. It is the main source of energy for the body. As the body receives no food for several hours in Ramadan days, first glucose is consumed, and once the body runs out of glucose, it is in the turn of fat. Therefore, fasting, in fact, gives a chance to the body to metabolize extra fat. The process of shifting the fuel from glucose to fat goes slowly. Hence, there is enough time for muscles to transform protein of foodstuffs into energy. The balance between food and liquid is very important in Ramadan. Although kidneys keep water and slats of the body, part of the water perishes through perspiration. In view of this, drinking juices and eating fruits is very useful as they are the source of fiber and help the individual tolerate thirst better. Fruits have water, vitamins, and minerals. So, after the iftar or breaking the fast, it is recommended to eat some fruit salad. The fiber in fruits is useful in destroying constipation, removal of poisons, and helps the digestive system and blood circulation. Fruits are digested easier than vegetables and help absorption of energy.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In mid-May 2016, Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders told his supporters in Kentucky that the U.S. was heading toward becoming an oligarchy state.
But what we are addressing right now is a real threat of oligarchy in America. And as you all know, what oligarchy is about is a handful of wealthy families controlling the economic and political life of this nation. And if anybody here thinks that we are not moving in that direction, where a handful of billionaires and Wall Street and multinational corporations controlling the economic and political life of this nation, if you don't think that that is what is happening now, you are not paying attention.
4 years later, Sanders endorsed Joe Biden as the Democratic nominee for president, a man who had already been in the U.S. political arena for almost half a century, an oligarch per excellence.
This election is the most important in the modern history of this country. In response to the unprecedented crises we face, we need an unprecedented response, a movement like never before, of people who are prepared to stand up and fight for democracy and decency and against greed, oligarchy, and bigotry. And we need Joe Biden as our next president.
Sanders' seemingly surprise move was a major step toward bringing unity to his party's effort to unseat Trump, who was regarded even among some Republicans as the outsider. The fact is, while the United States presents itself as the beacon of democracy, it is hardly more than an oligarchy. A study carried out in 2014 by two political scientists, Martin Gillens and Benjamin Page, found that economic elites and organized groups representing business interests have substantial independent impacts on U.S. government policy, while average citizens have little or no independent influence. To have political influence here means Congress responds to you by passing the laws and policies you like. Low influence means you're ignored. Congress passes laws that have no relationship to what you want. According to the research, not only do the wealthy have the most influence in the U.S., ordinary voters have basically none.
Whether a particular form of governance or democracy is good or bad has got to be decided on the sole criteria of the benefit it has provided for the common man. Policy coming out of Washington today has little to do with democracy, but is rather a raw political attempt to assert the continued domination of the ruling financial oligarchy centered in the major banks of London and New York and backed up by the military alliance of the United States.
Meanwhile, America's oligarchic wealth has reached levels sometimes exceeding those of Russia and China. During the COVID-19 pandemic, America's 745 billionaires increased their holdings by 70%, adding $2.1 trillion to their wealth in just over a year. No doubt a portion of this wealth goes into politics. The Koch brothers said they invested about $250 million in the 2016 election for Republicans, while Michael Bloomberg spent about $23 million on Democrats in the same year.
This is not a partisan issue. This is an issue of mission. This is an issue of morality. This is an issue of what kind of nation we want to live in. Do we want to live in a nation where people have the right to elect their representatives and their leaders? Or do we want to live in an oligarchy or a plutocracy where only a handful of people call the shots? We must lead on this issue.
As early as 2012, more than 40% of all money spent in federal elections came from the wealthiest of the wealthiest, not the top 1% or even the top 10th of the 1%, but from the top 1% of the 1%. More and more Americans now realize that their democracy has morphed into an oligarchy. The combined wealth of America's top 400 billionaires came to $2.7 trillion in 2017, which is more than the entire GDP of Italy, $1.8 trillion, or France, $2.5 trillion. The U.S. government's ability to really serve its citizens has been kneecapped for the private interests of a relative few. In a July 2017 poll by the Association Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, 75% of Americans believed people like them had too little influence in Washington, and 82% believed that the rich had too much power over the government.
I still say they are illegally running something in the United States of America. How dare they call this a democracy when it's not government for the people, by the people, but by an oligarchy, government controlled by the few. That's what the United States is.
Even the Trump administration, which claimed to be a voice of the people, championing their interests against a Washington elite, was the culmination of oligarchic rule, an administration totally at the service of arms companies, among others.
With every war, the ruling military, industrialists,
oligarchs enjoyed phenomenal growth of their wealth and influence, while young Americans, mostly underprivileged and poor, would sacrifice their lives in the sinister cycle of killing and getting killed. All in the name of the universal values of freedom, democracy, and human rights.
In 2020, the Center for International Policy, CIP, released a report revealing that more than $1 billion had been donated to top 50 U.S. think tanks by U.S. defense contractors between 2014 and 2019. These think tanks play into the hands of the U.S. Defense Department's narrative with their reports and media releases. The political clout of billionaires has increased since the Supreme Court's 2010 Citizen United decision, which determined that election spending regulations restrict the right of corporations to free speech. As for Biden, his promise to build back better has turned out to be an empty promise, and things are pretty much the same as before. His American Rescue Bill provides just enough relief to enable people to go back to living lives as economically stressed as they were before the pandemic. Even before the pandemic, 40% of Americans could not afford a $400 unexpected expenditure. A system that consistently makes it easier for the rich to get richer and harder for the poor to even make it at all is not called democracy. When the American citizens cannot seriously consider a 3% wealth tax on billionaires, yet cannot raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, they cannot call their ruling system democracy. When the three richest people in the US, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, and Warren Buffett, own more than the bottom half of the country combined, doesn't oligarchy describe the system more accurately? All in all, the biggest divide in America today runs between oligarchy and democracy. When oligarchs fill the coffers of political candidates, they can be confident there will be no meaningful action against them and in favor of ordinary people. The U.S. political system has been widely but wrongly described as the one of the people, by the people and for the people. In reality, it is run by a group of oligarchs that make up the ruling class of American society. It is not owned or ruled by the people. It's just shouldered by the people.
Martyrdom of Imam Ali, peace upon him. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate, salam and welcome to the program. Heartfelt condolences to all our listeners on a very tragic day. In fact, today is that fateful day in history which saw the end of the only instance of the administration of social justice with the martyrdom of the commander of the all true believers, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, the cousin, son-in-law, and divinely designated vicegerent of the Almighty's last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Before we present you a special program on the tragic 21st of Ramadan, here is Ayah 15 of Surah Hujurat, where God Almighty says, "The true believers are only those who have attained faith in Allah and His Prophet and have never doubted, and who wage jihad with their possessions and their persons in the way of Allah. It is they who are the truthful." We are once again commemorating the martyrdom anniversary of the barometer of belief, the fulcrum of faith, the paragon of the pious, the epitome of eloquence, the byword of bravery, the manifestation of magnanimity, the symbol of sincerity, the jewel of justice, and the excellent exemplar of the administration the like of which the world has yet to see. The grand man who passed away on the grand night of Ramazan continues to transcend history and all historical developments despite the passing away of a millennium and four centuries since the day when struck on the head by the poisoned sword of a cowardly renegade, while engrossed in the ritual morning prayer of the 19th of the fasting month, he expressed those immortal words: Fosto varapul Ka'be, by the Lord of the Ka'be, I have triumphed. Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, triumphed because, as the divinely designated heir of the Almighty's last and greatest messenger, he drew the permanent line between the rule of the righteous and the misrule of the miscreants. Deprived for 25 long years of his right of political leadership of the Ummah, following the passing away of his cousin and father-in-law, the Prophet, he never harbored grudge against the usurpers. Whenever they came begging at his doorstep to resolve the problems facing the Muslims, he readily gave them the finest advice, to the extent that the second Caliph Umar ibn Khattab would say, "If not for Ali, I would have perished." When masses thronged his threshold to take over the caliphate, he refused, and when their pleas increased in view of the critical situation facing the Islamic realm, he reluctantly took up the reins of government to salvage the faith of Muslims, on condition he would rule only in accordance with the laws of God in the Holy Quran and the precepts set by the Prophet, rather than the un-Islamic innovations made by the previous three caliphs. Here is what he said on establishing the model government of social justice. By Allah, I had no liking for the caliphate nor any interest in government. But you yourself invited me to it and prepared me for it. When the caliphate came to me, I kept the book of Allah in my view and all that Allah had put therein for us, and all that according to which He has commanded us to take decisions. And I followed it and also acted on whatever the Prophet had laid down as sunnah. The famous exegete of the Noble Qur'an, Abdullah ibn Abbas, has narrated, "I saw Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, mending his shoes. I said, 'It is better you spend your time on repairing the social affairs.' He ignored me until he finished with his shoes and asked me how much the value of his pair of shoes was. I said that it had no value. He insisted that I may price it as it was. I said, 'Well, a fraction of a dirham?' Imam Ali, peace upon him, said, 'By Allah, this pair of shoes is more favorable to me than leading your political affairs, unless I can establish right and eradicate falsehood.'" In one of his sermons, Imam Ali, peace upon him, elaborates on the concept of jihad, or striving sincerely in the way of God, which ought to inspire the spirit of resistance and the resolve to solve crises in contemporary Muslim societies, which are facing a variety of intricate plots from cultural, social, and economic to wars imposed upon them by the enemies of humanity, such as the Zionists and the US, as well as their minions, the Takfiri terrorists, modern-day Khawarij, to which the Imam's assassin Ibn Muljam belonged. We'll be right back. The Imam says, Jihad is one of the doors of paradise which Allah has opened for His chosen servants. It is the dress of piety and the protective armor of Allah and His trustworthy shield. Whoever abandons it, Allah covers him with the dress of disgrace and the clothes of distress. Beware, I called you to fight these people night and day, secretly and openly, and exhorted you to attack them before they attacked you, because by Allah, no people have been attacked in the hearths of their homes, but they suffered disgrace. But you put it off to others and forsook it, till destruction befell you and your cities were occupied. You have become the target at which arrows are shot. You are being attacked, but you do not attack. Allah is being disobeyed and you remain agreeable to it. When I ask you to move against them in summer, you say, it is hot weather, spare us, till the heat subsides. When I order you to march in winter, you say, it is severely cold, give us some time till cold clears from us. Alas, despite such words of wisdom, the Iraqis, because of their weak faith, failed to heed the admonishments of Imam Ali, peace upon him, and the result was calamitous for them and the other sections of the Ummah, not just through the seizure of the Caliphate by the Umayyad charlatan Muawiyah ibn Abu Sufyan, but by the several centuries of deprivation they continued to suffer well into modern times. The words of Imam Ali, peace upon him, are a warning to Iranian people, whom God Almighty rescued through Imam Khomeini from the despotic Pahlavi regime and the hegemonic Americans, that if the laws of God are violated, if the Sunnah of the Prophet is ignored, and if the precepts of Imam Ali, peace upon him, and the other 11 infallible Imams of the Ahlul Bayt are set aside, on the misconstrued notion of progress on the patterns of the Deccan and West, then the result would be suicidal in the transient world and damnation in afterlife. Therefore, as Muslims, we owe to tread the footsteps of the person whom Prophet Muhammad likened to the Noble Quran, and who left for our guidance the lasting legacy of the rule of social justice. Thus, there are immortal lessons to be learnt, not just from the discourses, but from all the actions and deeds of Imam Ali, peace upon him, whose martyrdom we commemorate.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
As Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is your host, Musa al-Bahadili, and you are now listening to the program Q&A on Islamic Beliefs. Joining us in the studio today is our dear friend and esteemed guest speaker, Sheikh Murtada Karimi, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sheikh, I welcome you and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Our question today is about historical events and also something perhaps tied to the fate of the Islamic Ummah. And the question, it is as follows. Why Imam Ali alayhi salam, the commander of the faithful, why was he not able to, by perhaps enacting better policies when dividing the money of the treasury amongst the Muslims to keep everybody satisfied by giving those who want more money, such as Talha and Zubair, to avoid war? Is that not more beneficial than being completely just and thus having so many wars?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. First of all, it's not so many wars, because the second and the Imam Ali al-Salam had only three wars. The second was initiated with Muawiyah, which had nothing to do with dividing the public treasury. And the third was Khawarij, again, not related to this issue. And the first battle was initiated by Talha, Zubair and Aisha, but although to some extent it is related to, the question, but we have more important factors which played a key role. Now, first of all, sometimes people, when they ask this question, I mean, they presume that the Holy Prophet was different, as if the Holy Prophet was more tolerant,
more peaceful, more flexible, than the Imam.